The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
We have made it to the final hour here on a Thursday afternoon, and really looking forward to our next guest. So last year during COVID, we began speaking to a lot of young journalists around the SEC and what were they doing with classes disrupted and sports activities. And we've continued to follow a number of them even through the football season, maybe because I used to do that myself about 150 years ago. It's a special interest, but I think it's really great to catch up with the young folks on these campuses. And one of them is joining us now. He is Simon Gibbs from the Vanderbilt Hustler. And Simon is going out with style. He has won two huge awards. One honored the great Charlie Alexander, and the other one, Skip Bayless. And we say hello to Simon. Simon, thank you. I was watching Morning Joe today. Willie Geist was interviewing Tyler Kepner. They both used to work together on the paper that you have been with, and it was pretty cool to see. I know those names are pretty important in your world. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you? I actually have Tyler Kepner's book right behind me, but I'm doing well. And you know, it's crazy that this year has gone so quickly. Given that each day felt like it was so long. But, you know, now that we're in the spring, now that I'm officially stepped away from the Hustler, I'm being succeeded by Justin Hershey, who I promise you will somehow find a way to be on this show far more times than I have in the past year. But, yeah, it's almost surreal that everything is coming to an end in just a few days.
Well, I'll save the heavy lifting questions for later about what's next, but I would like to reflect back on this past year, because we talked to you during the pandemic when it was really tough for everyone. But I felt especially badly for young people on these campuses, the spring, the time of their lives, and everything was shut down. Take us through your last year.
The last year was crazy. Obviously, in August, in early August, the whole summer, we were left waiting, wondering if we're even going to be invited back to campus. Eventually, we were invited back to campus, and I had not the slightest clue what I would be doing if there were no Vanderbilt sports, right? Because I was the incoming sports editor of the student newspaper, and without sports, I wasn't sure how I'd proceed. But what instead followed was probably the wildest roller coaster, at least in terms of athletics, I've seen in a long time. And that's coming from someone who's covered quite a bit of a roller coaster over the past few years. You know, we're talking three athletic directors, two winless seasons, and lots of championships in between, both at the SEC and NCAA level. So it was just a weird, weird semester. And I will say it's gotten better with time. I think the second semester, particularly with students, faculty, and more getting vaccinated, it's been a lot easier and a lot easier to somewhat return to normal. But it's still going to be a little strange, you know, graduating on Vanderbilt's football field in front of a very socially distant stadium with students seated all around the field and family and parents in pods of two separated by many feet. You know, the pandemic's not over yet. So we certainly haven't returned to normal just this day.
I'm curious how you feel about that, because we talked earlier about the conversation that Jimbo Fisher had yesterday at a packed quarterback club with more than 500 people in Houston. You keep up with baseball. You watch where, and I'm not mentioning any names because it's almost everyone but Vanderbilt, where they're packed in 13,000 strong. What do you make out of how different things are where you reside versus almost everyone else?
I think Vanderbilt's doing this correctly. I think Candace Dory Lee and the administration is handling this the exact way they should. I think it's a little bit embarrassing and a little bit nerve-wracking that in the few states that are lagging behind the rest of the United States in vaccinations, they're the ones hosting packed stadium. I'm not saying that it's going to spike, and I'm not saying that, you know, it's going to end up being a disaster that they're having fans in their stadiums. I just don't see why you're rushing it right now. I don't see why inviting people to pack a baseball stadium, you know, many, many months before football season even begins is worth it. Furthermore, I'm curious what vaccinations are going to look like in the fall. Are they going to require them at SEC football events? Probably not. But is it wise to pack 100,000 people into a stadium when not everyone is vaccinated, potentially not close to everyone? Probably not. So I think it's a little strange seeing other schools handling it so differently from Vanderbilt. But I can confidently say, at least in my opinion, that I think Vanderbilt's done an excellent job handling this. And I will say, shortly after our graduation, or I believe the day before, an array of mandates are being lifted here in Nashville. And Vanderbilt has responded by saying May 18th, I believe, is the first baseball game that will be 100% attendance. So it's exciting to see that, you know, not too far from now.
Simon Gibbs with us. Simon, I want to talk about one important story that we talked to you about a couple of months ago, that one would have never predicted that Vanderbilt football would have one of the great stories of the year in all of sports, and that's the Sarah Fuller story. Take us back to that time where you played a big role in it, and what was it like to not only be part of it, but to cover it?
It was wild. It was probably one of the crazier weeks of my year. When I first got the tip that Sarah was or had at least attended practice with the football team, I couldn't really believe it. I soon heard from many others the exact same story. And that's when we ran our story, which ended up pretty much breaking every analytics record we have on our website. I almost couldn't believe how many people had clicked on it. And to not only see it come to fruition, but to see Sarah make two extra points and take that kickoff without making a mistake, doing it on day's notice, and B, seeing, you know, what happened in the coming months. I mean, seeing Sarah introduce the Vice President of the United States, seeing Sarah's name in newspapers and on shows across the country, it's incredible just to think that I had a role in that. Well, not a role in her playing, of course, but a role in breaking the story. I think it was one of the coolest things I've followed in a long time. And I honestly think that given, you know, having covered national championships in baseball, and having covered so many other moments in so many other sports, despite the fact that Vanderbilt lost both games she appeared in, despite the fact that they were struggling, I would have to say that was probably the highlight of my collegiate journalism career.
What was your reaction, or maybe is, because it's still ongoing, with some very pointed criticism at her and what she accomplished coming from the city that you're living in right now?
I think it's asinine. And I also know that some people are still beating a dead horse here, right? This happened months ago. She was asked on day's notice to do a very difficult task that people who do this for 15, 20 years and then go into college as a, you know, football kicker still can't always convert. Right, she did it on day's notice. She did it well. She made no mistakes. And yet there are some people, really one major media person, who is somehow still talking about it as if it's some sort of thing that Vanderbilt only did so it could pat itself on the back. Something that Vanderbilt did just as for show because they were in the middle of a winless season. That wasn't at all the case. And to think that this many months after the fact, they're still entrenched in and convinced that this was a ridiculous stunt by Vanderbilt is crazy to me. And I think we're long past the point where, you know, we can stop giving Sarah criticism. Because the other thing is, if you're in Sarah's shoes, what did she do wrong? What would she have done differently? Nothing. She was asked if she could step in, and she was asked if she could sort of play the role of a hero here because they didn't have a kicker. And she said yes. I don't know that many people who, if they believe they're capable of doing it, would say no to that. So the fact that the attacks have gone almost personal is a little ridiculous to me.
Does it concern you at all that the person doing the attacking, Clay Travis, is a Vanderbilt graduate?
Yeah, it does. Maybe that's not the topic for this show, but it absolutely bothers me. And it bothers me that he hasn't been quiet about that since the day the story broke. He had been trashing Vanderbilt for it. He had been trashing Sarah for it. And frankly, this is coming from a person who never talks about Vanderbilt, never, until he had something that you know, gave him reason to go on these rants. And to me, it's just so frustrating to see.
Few more comments from Simon. If anyone doubts he's going to make it big in this industry, you don't need to doubt. The way he distills opinions is beyond fascinating to me as someone who could not do it very effectively when I was his age. Okay, let's get to the parental questions now from one of your elders. What's next? What are you going to do now that you're leaving Vanderbilt?
So, unfortunately, given the tough state of the job market with the pandemic and with companies still very slowly in the process of rebuilding after having to, you know, furlough and lay off many employees, I still have yet to find my next landing spot. That said, you know, I'm in the process of interviewing and applying at multiple places. So I'm hopeful that something will turn up sooner rather than later. But at this moment, my future is still as much a question to me as it is for you.
And Simon, I mean, you're at the top of the food chain in terms of graduates in your space, in your field. Help us understand what's going on out there for young people like yourself who are entering the workplace or hoping to enter the workplace. How bad is it?
Well, it's very competitive, very, very competitive. And we have to understand that this is an industry that recruits late in the first place. And now they're starting to recruit at a slower rate than they normally do. That's just because there are fewer openings. It's just the way the cookie crumbles. If you pick this industry or anything close to it, you know how competitive it is, and you know what you get yourself into when you spend months and months and months applying and interviewing and, you know, not getting the answer you're looking for, at least in the immediate future. So, you know, I'm not too worried at this point in time. I'm hopeful that I'll end up landing on my feet, and I'm hoping that it comes, you know, in the next couple of weeks or month.
All the best. Simon, congratulations on all the accomplishments, the awards, your ability to make sense out of it all. And we wish you well. We hope to see you very, very soon. Stay in touch with us, and thanks so much for everything.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Simon Gibbs with some incredible comments there about many topics, and just one more young person who has great credentials looking to enter the workplace here with graduation season upon us. We'll get your reaction to all of that, plus everything we've talked about. We've had the governor of Georgia on. We talked about the Jimbo, Nick Saban confusion, or maybe it wasn't so confusion, and your phone calls right around the corner. We're coming back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And as we welcome everyone back from the break, some breaking news from LSU. William Tate, the fourth, has unanimously been voted as LSU's next president. He was formerly a provost executive VP at South Carolina. He will be LSU's first black president in the university's history. The announcement literally just made moments ago in Baton Rouge. And we continue with your phone calls in reaction to everything that has gone on here today. And let's get right to it. Brandon is in Birmingham. You're on the air. Hello, Brandon.
Hey, Paul. I was just listening to the Vanderbilt kid, Gibbs. And I just wanted to kind of note something. I think he kind of mischaracterized Clay a little bit. First of all, Clay never attacked Sarah Fuller. He attacked Vanderbilt for what I think is a popular opinion, in that Vanderbilt kind of made this a show. And then I watched his podcast. He never attacked Sarah Fuller directly. And so I think it's, and second of all, it's a little bit problematic because Clay is the only person in media that was willing to call it out for what it looked like. I think that's why Clay was so popular. I mean, he just sold his company for God knows how much money to Fox for a reason. And so I think, you know, might be a little bit of unfair to him, so I just wanted to call in because I'm a big Clay guy. So,
thank you for the call. Don is up next in Florida. Hello, Don. Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Listen, the reason I'm calling, and if I sound a little nervous, the first time I've ever called in on a show, so please overlook that. But the reason I'm calling, I was sitting here this afternoon watching your show, and I watch it when I can from time to time, and you got a very good show. You're very professional and very honest. I'm calling about the comment, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you made about UCF, about, I think, Heupel and Scott Frost and George O'Leary. And I think you said that George O'Leary put UCF on the map, or either all three of those guys put UCF on the map. And the guy that put them on the map, though, Paul, was Gene McDowell. Do you remember him?
I do vaguely. And tell me more about, because I really don't know much about him.
He was coaching. He was FSU's first All-American.
Right, yeah. Right, I knew that.
All right. And then he coached for Coach Bowden for 12 years before he got the job at UCF in 1985. And when he took the job at UCF, Paul, I think UCF was Division III. And it wasn't much of a program. My high school team could have beat them. And he took that program. They were broke. And they went from Division III to Division II to Division I-AA to Division I. And I think they got into Division I 1994, I believe. And he just put them on the map. We just had his memorial Saturday.
Yeah, I knew he had just died. Well, listen, I apologize, because I did not know. I did not realize it. I mean, I'm familiar with his association with FSU, but I did not pay much attention, obviously, to UCF until O'Leary got there.
Right.
So I did not mean anything by that. I just didn't know anything about it.
That's okay. And O'Leary will tell you, he's even told me privately that Gene was the one that that put him on the map. And O'Leary had a very good career down there. And O'Leary's a class guy, great guy.
Yeah, I like him. Well, I apologize because I just, I didn't know because, primarily living in Alabama,
sure.
I just wasn't paying much attention to what UCF was doing in Division II or whatever they were in.
Yeah, well, way back in 19, I think they were in Division III in 1985 till Gene got there. And, of course, his experience at FSU, coaching there with Coach Bowden and him being the first All-American at FSU, he had a very good, strong background. And he knew what to do when he got down there. And I'm telling you, he took that program from nothing. And look where they're at today.
No, and yeah, I mean, I think you could almost say the same thing about FSU, which wasn't FSU a teacher's college?
Yes, it was a woman's college.
Right.
Woman's college, and then it was a teacher's college, and it became co-ed in 1948.
Right.
And then Bill Peterson kind of put them on the map in the 60s. You know, that was when Gene became an All-American. He was their first one in 1963. And then Biletnikoff was the next year in 64. And, of course, Biletnikoff was the big name, you know, and he went on and played pro sports.
Sure.
And Gene went into coaching and didn't play pro football. And I'll remember that, trying to remember the coach from Auburn when we played at FSU. That's where I went to school. At 63, I think it was Gene's last year, we played Auburn. Gene weighed 180 pounds. And Auburn, and I don't remember the guy's name.
Well, it would have been Shug Jordan. Shug Jordan was the coach.
Okay. Well, they had a tackle that was about 6'5", 275, that was first-team All-American. And Shug Jordan came over to FSU's locker room after the game and told Coach Peterson, he said, "I want to see this 180-pound linebacker and offensive guard you got." I said, "He pushed my 275-pound All-American all over the field," and he did. And he said, "I got to see him." And so Coach Peterson told Gene to come out there. He wanted to introduce him to somebody. Gene had extremely strong legs, and he was very, very a determined guy. But I tell you, to push an All-American 275 pounds all over the field, and you only weigh 180. you gotta have something, Paul.
That's great. I Don, thanks for the story, and thanks for correcting me on that, because I really did not know that. Didn't mean it as a slight. Steve is calling next. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Paul. Great show, man. It takes me back to the airport days where you never know the advice and things you're gonna hear and people you're going to meet from day to day, man. It's an awesome show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The NIL stuff is the reason why I'm calling. I'm kind of half and half on it. I love what Charles said yesterday on the show. I totally respect, even though I'm a Bama fan, I totally respect his comments. Some of them are crazy, but man, I think he nailed it as far as the players, how it could become a problem. But, you know, I know they get their books and stuff paid for, but, you know, if they're scholarshiped and everything, which most of them are, but, you know, they can't work during off season. They can't raise money and stuff like that, but they do have a place to live and all that. So, you know, I don't know, it just goes back and forth. But the thing about it is, I think you might have said it probably three years ago, is where the NCAA dropped the ball. They didn't get ahead of it. And, I mean, y'all were talking about it, like I said, you know, a while back. And, you know, they should have got ahead of it. I wish the guy from Vandy all the best. I hope he finds a good fit. I think he's awesome. I loved how you kind of threw Travis's name out there. As far as the other caller, you know, when I lived up there, I called in there every once in a while, and I just think you're so much more professional. I'll leave that at that. And, man, you just have a great day, man. It's just been an awesome show and an awesome week. So,
Steve, I appreciate all of that. That meant a lot and does mean a lot. We will take a break. We still have 30 minutes to go for this Thursday afternoon. If you want to get in, you can get in. 855-242-7285. Governor Georgia with us earlier. A lot about Jimbo and Nick Saban. We talked to the reporter who broke that story. You heard from the college sports editor a minute ago. We are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We welcome you back. We still have 25 minutes to go as we talk about all these issues, including NIL. That's a tough one. Let's get back to the calls, and Ryan is up next in Kansas City. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, Paul. I had a question about the name, image, and likeness, and I just was curious of whether or not this is going down a rabbit hole, just because I'm just trying to imagine if you had something like SMU from like the 80s, if you had that in today's world of college football in terms of like a recruiting. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't, you know, the SMU case, for those who don't remember, and many of you were not born, SMU was begging to get put out of business. They were already in trouble. The governor was buying players, boosters, and they were bragging about it, and they were not cooperative, and the NCAA felt like they had no choice. I think this is completely different. There will be fraud. There will be malfeasance. I think that comes with the territory, but I think the biggest issue right now with NIL is coming up with something uniform. It will not work if every state has a different bylaw.
Okay. That makes sense. Do you think they're going to have to, like, report the, like, say if someone gets money for signing signatures or whatever, will they have to report that to the college or what?
Yeah, I think without knowing a lot about what's going on right now, and I think it is ongoing, every university is going to have somebody assigned to this, and there has to be an accounting. You cannot let your players go off making independent deals without you knowing what's happening, because I mean, what you don't want are some nefarious things. Like, let's say you get some lineman who some strip joint wants him to do Facebook endorsements. I mean, that you just can't let that. I mean, I know it's free enterprise, but there has to be some clauses put in there to protect the integrity of the university.
Mm-hmm. One last question. Uh-huh. I was looking at this. Is Coach France from Iowa, does he have one of the best coaching trees ever, in your opinion?
I do think you're right about that. I'm trying to remember some of the, how far.
The guy from Iowa there at the moment.
Right.
Bob Stoops.
Yeah.
Guy at K-State. And then those just go on and on, really.
Yeah, no, yeah. You're right. Yeah, it is. I'm trying to remember who else is on that tree. I mean, I've seen it before, but it's a remarkable group of people. I totally agree with you on that.
Okay, I just saw it and I didn't. It's just kind of interesting to me, and I didn't know what your thoughts were.
Yeah, so we're talking about Hayden Fry, right?
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Hayden Fry.
Yeah, Hayden Fry was such a character too. But yeah, there is a long list of coaches that have come through his tutelage. Hey, thanks for the call. Very good call. Really appreciate it. You got it. Let's check out Dora, who is up next in Lexington, Kentucky. Hello, Dora.
Hi, Paul. How you doing?
Oh, we're doing great.
Good. I just want to, first, I appreciate your show. I think I've said that before. I really appreciate your show. I'm a student of college football. I went to UF undergraduate, and I went to UT for graduate school. And I understand the dilemma that this NIL thing does. But these kids, it's a different time. It's a different age. I'm old. I'm older. I mean, I got an undergrad in 95. So I'm old now. And, you know, what worked then doesn't work now. And some of them live quite well, and they do quite well, oddly enough. But I think that they should be paid. I'm sorry.
Dora, and I respect that. We had somebody that called in from the 70s, and the world was different. And
it was.
I mean, with what is going on today, and even though I'm in the media, I mean, I'm not sure I understand half of it. And I know that sounds like my parents and their parents, but young people in college are very entrepreneurial. They're making money.
Yeah.
And they know
yeah,
it. Some of them know what they're doing, and it's just not fair. And I see a lot of problems with it, but I also think it's indicative of where we are today. And I'm everybody sounds like their parents at some point in their life, but I also
mm-hmm.
think you have to keep an open mind that just because we didn't do it doesn't mean they can't. And they're not being paid money. They're not getting a check as they go through as they get their towels after practice. They're earning this money by themselves. And we hope.
They are. And I think that I just, like I said, initially I didn't like it, but I understand it. And it's not for me. I mean, obviously I wasn't a college athlete, but I understand what they're doing. And I just wish everyone well and well wishes. And I think that, you know, this could be a generational wealth thing to some of these kids that don't make it to the next level. So I think that capitalism is the name of the game. And some people play it well. I don't. But some people play
well. Dora,
so I just want to.
I mean, I made, I think, $40 a month when I was the sports editor of the university newspaper. I frankly thought that was a lot of money. I mean, that gave me a chance to go out and do things and that I didn't have because I did not have any money. I didn't have a car. And I know that sounds crazy, but I had a single mom that somehow was able to get me to college with scholarship money. But hey, today is different. No one was going to pay me to do anything other than that. I mean, I could get a job working at a restaurant or fast food, and I did, during the summers, but not during school. And it helped. That $40 a month helped lead me to where I am today. So it was fairly important in my overall learning and my career.
Well, obviously it worked and it just did wonders. And every day I learn something new from you. So thank you all for what you do.
Thank you. I do hope the school newspaper has given the sports editor a raise, though. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.